Very good morning, children. Today, I am going to teach the remaining events of civil disobedience movement from chapter number 1, Nationalism in India, class 10, History, in module number 4x4. This module I have divided into three parts. Number 1, participation of different social groups. Number 2, limits of the civil disobedience movement. Number 3, cultural factors and identities which created a sense of collective belongingness among the people of India. Let us see first about the participation of different social groups which participated in the civil disobedience movement. The five main groups which participated in the civil disobedience movement were rich peasants, poor peasants, business community, industrial working class, and participation of women. Now let us see all the five one by one. Now the first one is rich peasant community. In the countryside, rich peasants and communities like the Patidars of Gujarat and the Jats of Uttar Pradesh joined the movement. Being the producers of commercial crafts. Commercial crafts means, you know very well, the crafts which are meant for export or which are meant for making money. They were very hard hit by the trade depression and falling prices. As their cash income disappeared, they found it impossible to pay the government's revenue demand. So they demanded the cancellation of taxes or revenue demand. The refusal of the government to reduce the revenue demand led to widespread resentment. These rich peasants were active in organizing their communities and at times forcing reluctant members to participate in the boycott programs. For them, fight for Swaraj was a struggle against high revenues. But they were deeply disappointed when the movement was called off in 1931 without the revenue rates being revised. Therefore, when the movement was restarted in 1932, many of them refused to participate. Now let us move on to the second one, poor peasants community. The poor peasants were not just interested in the lowering of the revenue demand. Many of them were small tenants, cultivating land they had rented from landlords. As the depression continued and cash incomes decreased, the small tenants found it difficult to pay their rent. They wanted the unpaid rent to the landlord to be remitted. They joined a variety of radical movements, often led by socialists and communists. Congress did not want to upset the rich peasants and landlords, so the Congress was not willing to support no rent campaigns of the poor peasants in most places. So the relationship between the poor peasants and the Congress remained uncertain. Now let us move on to the third one, business community. Indian merchants and industrialists wanted protection against the imports of foreign goods and a rupee sterling foreign exchange ratio that would discourage imports. They wanted to end colonial control over Indian economy. So they joined the civil disobedience movement and gave financial assistance and refused to buy or sell imported goods. Most businessmen came to see Swaraj as a time when colonial restrictions on business would no longer exist and trade and industry would flourish without constraints. As the industrialists came closer to the Congress, workers stayed aloof. The Congress was reluctant to include workers' demands as part of its program of struggle. It felt that this would alienate industrialists and divide anti-imperial forces. To organize business interests, the business community formed the Indian Industrial and Commercial Congress in 1920 and the Federation of the Indian Chamber of Commerce and Industries, in short FICCI, in 1927. And it was led by prominent industrialists like Purushottam Das Thakur Das and G.D. Birla. The industrialists attacked colonial control over the Indian economy and supported the civil disobedience movement when it was first launched. They gave financial assistance to civil disobedience movement and refused to buy or sell imported goods. Now let us move on to the fourth important class, industrial working class. The industrial working classes did not participate in the civil disobedience movement in large numbers except in the Nagpur region. As the industrialists came closer to the Congress, workers stayed aloof, but in spite of that, some workers did participate in the civil disobedience movement. They adopted some of the ideas of Gandhian program like boycott of foreign goods as part of their own movements against low wages and poor working conditions. There were strikes by railway workers in 1930 and dock workers in 1932. In 1930, thousands of workers in Chotanagpur tin mines wore Gandhi caps and participated in protest rallies and boycott campaign. Now, another special feature in the form of the participation, if you see, means participation of women. See, the most important feature of the civil disobedience movement was the large-scale participation of women. During this time, particularly during Gandhiji's Salt March, thousands of women came out of their homes to listen to him. They participated in protest marches, manufactured salt, and picketed foreign clothes and liquor shops. Many went to jail. In urban areas, these women were from high-caste families. In rural areas, they came from rich peasant households. Moved by Gandhiji's Salt March, they began to see service to the nation as a sacred duty of women. Gandhiji was convinced that it was a duty of women to look after home and hearth, be good mothers and good wives. And for a long time, the Congress was reluctant to accommodate women to hold any position of authority within the organization. It was keen only on their symbolic presence. Now let us see two more important points regarding the civil disobedience movement. Main contributions of civil disobedience movement. First let us see. Civil disobedience movement was the first struggle to win Purna Swaraj or complete independence. Before the civil disobedience movement, the aim of the Congress was to get Swaraj. Swaraj means self-rule. But from 1930 onwards, the demand of the Indian National Congress was Purna Swaraj or complete independence. Second point in this, if you see, means it was based on non-violent satyagraha, and Gandhian ideas were widely followed. Women participated in large numbers in this movement. It was a real mass movement. Different social groups participated. It was an open challenge to the British rule. The people openly disobeyed the laws. Now we are going to see the next division, that is civil disobedience movement and its limits. It had its own limitations. There were four such limitations. Number one, Dalit participation in the civil disobedience movement. That is, we can say, non-participation of Dalits in the civil disobedience movement. Number two, depressed classes association. Number three, Pune Pact. Number four, lukewarm response of Muslims to the movement and the demands of Muslim. Now, let us see the Dalit participation in civil disobedience movement. Not all social groups were moved by the abstract concept of Swaraj. One such group was the nation's untouchables, who from around the 1930s had begun to call themselves Dalit or oppressed. For long, the Congress had ignored the Dalits. For fear of offending the Sanatanis, the conservative high caste Hindus. But Mahatma Gandhi declared that Swaraj would not come for 100 years if untouchability was not eliminated. He called the untouchables Harijans or the children of God, organized Satyagraha to secure them entry into temples and access to public wells, tanks, roads and schools. Many Dalit leaders were keen on a different political solution to the problems of their community. They began organizing themselves, demanding reserved seats in educational institutions and a separate electorate. Dalit participation in the civil disobedience movement was therefore limited, particularly in Maharashtra and Nagpur region. Now let us move on to the second important point, that is depressed class association and the Pune Pact. Dr. B.R. Ambedkar, who organized the Dalits into the Depressed Classes Association in 1930. Dr. Ambedkar clashed with Mahatma Gandhi at the second roundtable conference by demanding separate electorate for Dalits. When the British government conceded Dr. Ambedkar's demand, Gandhiji was not happy. So, he began a fast unto death. Gandhiji believed that separate electorates for Dalits would slow down the process of their integration into society. At last, Ambedkar understood Gandhiji's point and he accepted Gandhiji's position, and the result was the Pune Pact of September 1932. According to the pact signed between Gandhiji and Dr. Ambedkar, the depressed classes, later came to be known as scheduled castes, got reserved seats in provincial and central legislative councils. Now, third limit of the civil disobedience movement, that is lukewarm response of Muslims to the movement and their demands. After the decline of the non-cooperation Khilafat movement, a large section of Muslims felt alienated from the Congress. The Congress and the Muslim League made efforts to renegotiate an alliance. The important differences were over the question of representation in the future assemblies that were to be elected, but the negotiations failed. When the civil disobedience movement started, there was an atmosphere of suspicion and distrust between the two communities. Alienated from the Congress, a large section of Muslims could not respond to the call for a united struggle. Many Muslim leaders and intellectuals expressed their concerns about the status of Muslims as a minority within India. They feared that the culture and identity of minorities would be submerged under the domination of a Hindu majority. Now, we are going to see the cultural factors and identities which created a sense of collective belonging among the people of India. During this time in India, images, icons, flags, songs, folk dance, folk songs were used to promote nationalism or collective belongingness in the people. In India, many leaders played a very important role in promoting nationalism and a collective belongingness among the people. Let us see some of them under the following heads. Number one, image of Bharat Mata. Number two, Vande Mataram song. Third, folklore of South India. And the fourth one, national flag. And the fifth one, rediscovery of India's past. Now let us see the first one, image of Bharat Mata. Bankim Chandra Chattopadhyaya created the image of Bharat Mata. Later, Abanindranath Tagore painted her image. In this, the Bharat Mata looked like a sannyasini. She is calm, divine, and spiritual. Devotion towards her became a proof of nationalism. Second one, Vande Mataram. It was a prayer to Bharat Mata. It was written by Bankim Chandra Chattopadhyaya. Vande Mataram became the war cry of the Indians. It was later included in his novel Anand Math. Now, let us see the folklore of South India. Here, the folklore was revived. Nationalists toured the villages to collect the folk songs and legends. Rabindranath Tagore collected a number of folk songs and legends. In Madras, Nadesh Sastri published a four-volume collection of Tamil folk tales, the folklore of southern India. The folk songs and legends gave a true picture of Indian culture. They showed their old thoughts and characteristics of Indians. They created national pride among the people. Let us move on to the next one, that is the national flag. During the Swadeshi movement, a tricolor flag with red, green and yellow was developed. It had eight lotuses representing eight provinces of the British India. It also had a crescent moon which represented Hindus and Muslims. In 1921, Gandhiji designed the Swaraj flag. It was also a tricolor flag, red, green and white. It had a spinning wheel which represented the Gandhian idea of self-help. The flag became a symbol of the nation. It created a feeling of oneness. The people carried a flag in protest marches and rallies. Now I have given in the next slide two flags, the Swadeshi flag and the flag which was designed by Mahatma Gandhi. Please go through. And the last one, last point of the chapter, rediscovery of India's past. The British considered Indians backward and primitive. They said that the Indians were not capable of ruling themselves. In the 19th century, some educated Indians started their efforts to rediscover India's great achievements. They rediscovered the achievements made by the Indians in art, architecture, science, mathematics, religion, culture, law, philosophy, crafts, and the trade. Knowledge about the great achievements of Indians created national pride, self-confidence, and patriotism among the Indians. That's all, children. Thank you.